Hello and welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And this week, after a bit of a gap, we are going to be talking about the news. Now, we've kind of front-ended a nice big chunk of Canadian news, because, of course, all of last week we were talking about Eurovision.
Yes, we...
Which was not without its drama.
Well, I mean, the main drama about Eurovision was the lack of drama. And actually, I remember when we were watching it, during the actual videos, when we turned the mic off, when we actually just chatted with each other about what we were watching, a comment that came up a lot was that it was alarmingly boring.
It was. It was very, very disappointing. But
nobody dropped glitter from the ceiling.
I know. Actually, the whole stage production was... You know what? If you're curious what our opinion on it was, go back and look at it. But it turns out that the Ukraine is not without drama itself. Apparently, you know that rainbow arch I mentioned earlier?
A rainbow arch that you mentioned
in
earlier?
In the Ukraine.
Today or like...
A couple of episodes previous.
Okay.
And they'd taken this old statue of unity that had two men, and it was about how the Ukraine had joined the Soviet Union. And they were painting it rainbow colours until there were protests, and the mayor of Kyiv demanded that it stop, and they're just going to fill in the bits that they hadn't finished painting with some Ukrainian patterns.
Okay.
Because they didn't finish it. So there's this half-painted rainbow thing in Kyiv. But in Kharkiv, which is an eastern Ukrainian city, a couple of weeks later, actually less than a week later, there was a rally in support of LGBT folks to kind of raise attention of homophobia within the Ukraine.
Right, yeah.
And this is barely a week after Eurovision. And there were some people attacked the rally. They attacked various police officers there. A number of them actually got arrested for attacking the police officers who were protecting the march. But, you know, pride flag was burned, and it was just...
Most of the people that I've spoken to from the Ukraine over the past however many years, a lot of them have described Ukraine now as being where Canada was in the 90s, where way more people supported gay rights than were against it. But most of the people who supported it were of the, yeah, I suppose that's okay kind of frame of mind, where they just weren't bothered one way or the other. But it was the issue was that the people who were against it were really against it. And so it was sort of that squeeze out that was kind of happening over time. And I think that's more or less what we're seeing in a lot of countries in the world, where most people are like, man, I've got shopping to do. Like, can we delay this?
Yeah. Do I need to have a debate on this? Like, the kettle's wrong. I've got things to do. I mean, you know, I've got a meeting in 5. The kids are on the way. You know, it's just, yeah, I know. There's one thing that actually has been brought to a lot of people who have been quite bothered about this one.
Yeah.
And that is a video which was released by men.com, which for folks listening is a purveyor of gentlemen's cinema.
Yes.
They produce gentlemen's cinema. Yes.
Very middle of the road.
Yeah, very generic. Nearly always white, nearly always like buff guys.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
They don't do anything fancy.
Nothing very exciting. Yeah. Well, they decided to branch out with a bit of culture, and they use an Aboriginal religious tool, which is the didgeridoo, as a prop in their latest movie called Didgeridoo Me in the Ass. Apologies for my swearing, I'm quoting directly here. Where they did didgeridoo him in the derriere.
Yeah.
So that's it was people being understandably quite uncomfortable, not as uncomfortable as the other actor, but in this case it did cause quite the stir.
I mean, I haven't seen the scene, but I'm sure he agreed to be filmed doing that because he was
being didgeridoo-done in the derriere.
Yeah, because he was okay with it. So I mean,
well, what they need to know now is to didgeridoo, don't do that again.
Yeah.
And I need to stop putting didgeridoo in front of various
Why don't
words.
They just get a bad dragon? Bad dragon. Okay, you need... by the way, this is for the listeners as well. Do an image search for bad dragon. Turn safe search off.
Oh, risky.
And if you don't like what you see, don't keep looking.
Very risky. No, it's... And a lot of folks in Canada are very concerned because... and it's the idea, you know, are religious or like indigenous items of their culture just up for grabs as props in pornography?
Well, this is something I pointed out earlier, that they may not understand that in the United States. Like, if this was done in Australia, it would have a dramatically different message, because that is 100% you should have known better. What is wrong with you, you piece of trash? Mm-hmm. Whereas... he just showed me a clip where the actual... we're looking at the top half of the screen, and we're looking at... see, that looks like an oar.
No, it's a didgeridoo.
No, I know, but it looks like a dragon boat oar. The way that... Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I was just looking, because I know that somebody had complained, and I wasn't looking for the name of the actual association. Yeah. But yeah, no, it was a bit of a to-do.
But it's one of those things where I'm willing to give them this one for free, because they may not have known. So the analog that I gave earlier was when Nintendo got in huge trouble in the mid-2000s because of their portrayal of Jinx, which is one of the Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people accuse them of doing blackface. But the thing is, Japan has no history of blackface. They had no idea what anybody was complaining about. And it took them a couple of years to actually explain to them, okay, so this is the thing that happened in America in the 1920s. And Nintendo was like, yeah, but we're Japanese, and we're making this for Japanese consumption and also exporting it. And they're like, okay, but could you just change her from being black to blue? Because Jinx is like an ice type, and it's just supposed to represent that, like, when you find corpses in the ice, sometimes their skin turns black.
Okay.
So it's not meant to be blackface. It was just meant to be, like, dead from freezing to death face.
Okay.
And so, like, okay. And so eventually Nintendo switched it to dark blue, which was much... But it was just this whole thing. Like, they didn't know, and it took them a while for them to understand, because it was somebody else's history. It was somebody else's context. And so you give them that one for free. And then after that, if they do anything that's racially insensitive, you're like, okay.
Okay, remember that one time with the didgeridoo?
You should have learned, please. Yeah.
I like that. I mean, for folks in Aboriginal folks in Australia, I mean, it's certainly, it's...
Well, again, though, if it was an Australian studio, I would have, like...
They should have known better.
They should have known better, but it was an American one. It's not their history. They to them, the didgeridoo may have just been a musical instrument. They may not have understood that it had a history. Mm-hmm.
So we have been keeping an eye on, and for folks who are regular listeners, we've been keeping an eye on Bill C-16, the act to amend the Canadian Human Rights Act and the Criminal Code, adding gender identity and gender expression to both of those.
Right.
Now, good golly gosh, has there ever been an ongoing debate? So in great news, the bill passed the said committee. Now, but 2 weeks ago, we did an episode where I kind of brought you the highlights of one of the Senate committee hearings. Kimberly Manning, the professor in Concordia, did an absolutely phenomenal job. And I think even to this day, one of the things she said, if not, it may have been one of the other witnesses, but somebody essentially said, you know, what this is proposing is if you constantly misgender, so, you know, Sebastian, you identify as he.
Yeah.
If I said, you know, what is she doing? Why is she here? Why, you know, and you felt harassed by this, by being misgendered.
Okay.
Then that's grounds for harassment once gender identity, gender expression is in the Human Rights Act.
But it would still follow the usual rules of harassment, which is that it doesn't count as harassment until they ask you to not do it.
Yeah.
Because you can't accuse somebody of harassment if they didn't know they were doing something.
But right. They're doing it perpetually and on purpose, knowing that. And they, you know, one of the senators, I think Senator Platt, said, well, what about if you have a religious or scientific reason for not wanting to use the other pronouns for folks who are trans? The argument there being that, you know, some people don't believe in that paradigm of trans being an option, that there is male and female and that's it. And the idea would be, you know, it's very, very kind of like dated, and it's like, it's a very closed-minded approach. So she had the great response. So let's say you are one of these individuals with really, really closed views, and you refuse to call the person by the gender that they want to be called.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, you know, you're not going to get arrested, round up, and shot for it. Like, that's not, we're not in a dictatorship.
Yeah.
You know, you do have a third option, their name.
Yes.
And I tried so hard not to laugh. When she's like...
Were you in the audience at the time?
I was in the audience at the Senate committee, and I'm like...
I would have burst out laughing.
And she's like, well, you know, they could always use their name. There's no laws telling them they can't use their names. I mean, it might be a bit weird if you constantly only refer to somebody as their name.
Right.
But you're not breaking any rules.
You're not. No, no, no. Yeah.
So get out of jail free card, their name.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a thing. But there was a committee hearing last week, and it was the one where Senator Platt, the Conservative senator, managed to get the professor from Toronto on for an hour. And I forget, I think it's Johnson, professor, and he was in... he claims that, I mean, one element of the claim that I think we kind of agreed with,
yeah,
where he refuses to call trans folks in his classroom by their chosen expression. And his one of his arguments being that, you know, it coddles the students, that it kind of creates this false idea that once you go into the real world, people will roll over and call you whatever they want.
Yeah.
You know, in reality, people are going to misgender you. But also, on the flip side, you know, tuition pays his bills.
I've only heard one argument that defends him that I'm down with, which is if you're teaching a first year class, you have anywhere between 200 and 900 students, depending on the university, depending on the course.
What class has
200 for a first year course?
You meant just like just two students?
No, 200 to 900.
Okay.
Although I have had a class with only 3 students in it before.
Oh my gosh.
So anyway, 200 to 900 students in your average first year course. You barely even recognize the same ones twice if they don't sit in the front row. I mean, I've stood in front of many classes like this as a TA, as a guest instructor, that sort of thing. And you don't know. Somebody comes in and they look ambiguous. You roll with it. Halloween was last week, and everybody looks ambiguous during Halloween week, and there's only so many weeks in a semester, and so anyway. And then you get that part at the end of the semester where like a lot of the undergrads have given up on like bathing or not wearing the same clothes 3 days in a row, and everybody sort of like melds into this melting pot of gender, age, ethnicity, ambiguity, where you have no idea anymore, and you're just like person in the sixth row who I don't think has ever come to my class before. Yes, what is your answer to this question? And so, I mean, I can understand from that perspective, like, I'm not going to learn your snowflake identity unless it's a class with 40 students or less.
Yeah. Sure.
I think that. It's just, and that has more to do with compassion towards the limits of human memory than it does towards anything else. But that is the only excuse that I've heard. And he didn't even say that. It was a trans professor who I heard that from, was like, you know, obviously I'm very sympathetic, but on the other hand, if you've ever actually been a professor standing in front of the classroom, it's just, you know, student 23914, what is your answer? Yes, thank you.
So the thing that that I kind of wanted to address here is, I mean, they're, like we're talking about here, there's a group of feminists out of BC who claim that they were bullied into rolling with this legislation, whereas they wanted to define female-born spaces. Now, this kind of goes to the idea of trans folks and refugees and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But the BC Union, and I'm trying to find the name of it, British Columbia Federation of Labour, essentially passed a resolution mentioning the women's shelter in Vancouver, the Vancouver Rape Relief Shelter, which has been one of the most vocal against the bill.
Really?
In their kind of opposition to their position in support. Them, the Federation, being in support of the bill. Anyway, lots of people advocated in favor. Just last week we had this freedom of speech advocate, Professor What's-His-Face, and somebody else, both of them from the Conservatives. They tried to bring an amendment defining, putting a definition on expression and identity. This is part of the ongoing debate of how can we bring something so vague into law.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are dozens of things that are vague in law. Religion, as a protected grounds, is undefined.
Yep.
So the position of the Government of Canada, which you could hear 2 weeks ago when Minister Raybould,
okay,
I forget her first name, Wilson Raybould, I think it is, the Attorney General, kind of essentially put across the same point that, you know, we could define it, but it's much better for jurisprudence over multiple years to kind of come up with reasonable intentions. And if you're identifying, and I believe me here that someone brought this up, that what if you are a fully grown 4-year-old man identifying as a 6-year-old girl?
Yeah.
And the answer is, well, it's up to the courts to decide whether or not that is sincere, reasonable, within the grounds of the protections and so on and so forth. You know, it's not, that's a problem for the courts to figure out how to figure it out. Anyway, Long story short, it's an interesting conversation. You can check out all the recordings of the Senate committee hearings on the Senate TV. And they passed the bill through the Senate. The attempt to add an amendment was defeated with only two senators in favor. Both of them were the Conservatives. And then Senator Platt wanted to add a note on the bill. Now, normally, when
can
notes...
Can you do that even?
Yeah, when notes are added, it's where... If there was a just barely over majority vote in favor, and there's really substantive issues with the bill.
Okay.
And the idea being then is that it's the committee's way of saying, yes, we passed this, but you should be very aware of these key issues. And his note was, freedom of speech may be impacted, which, as we discussed earlier, is bull. Because you can just call people by their name.
Yeah.
And it might have impacts on various other things, all of which have been discredited during the committee hearings. So this note was also shot down. They're like, it doesn't have major issues.
That's also not in the spirit of freedom of speech anyway. This is something that has really bothered me over the past few years, the idea that freedom of speech is the freedom to say whatever you want, which it isn't. Freedom of speech is that the government has no right to tell you to not critique them. That is the spirit of freedom of speech. Yeah. And that's not what that is. I mean, it's the classic example about the way that you can interpret what it means to be freedom of speech by looking at different countries is asking the question, in that country, if you yell fire in a crowded movie theater, what happens?
Yeah.
And different countries have different answers because they all have different interpretations about, in the world, what freedom of speech means. But all of them at least have in common that the government cannot tell you to not critique them.
Mm.
Well, I mean, Trump is doing that, but it's more like, you guys, stop it. Stop being mean to me.
It breaks down to reasonable limits.
Yeah.
I think that is very important.
Yeah, yeah, without a doubt. That's the main thing. What are the reasonable limits of a given new law? Or an exist reinterpretation of an old law in some cases, but yeah.
So this one's going to the Senate proper, and the hope is that it will pass by the end of the summer, which means that after a 40, 50-year-old legal battle, this is, of course, I think the fourth or the fifth version of this bill, that we may eventually, finally, have trans rights equal to everybody else in Canada. And for us, I mean, I think it's really important as can queer, and I think gay men in particular should be paying attention because, you know, after gay marriage...
it started the landslide.
In 2005, yeah. Absolutely. We've kind of turned our back a little bit on our trans brothers and sisters or siblings, and we kind of owe debt, you know. These folks have always been there with us, supporting our rights to adopt, to equal access to pensions, to marriage... and now it's time that we put the support that we have behind this bill.
Mm-hmm.
So, very excited. It looks very likely to pass the Senate. It overwhelmingly passed the Senate committee. So, yeah, we're going to keep an eye on that and break the good news when that happens. Now, I mentioned just now the Gay Marriage Equality Act in 2005. And Canada Post has issued a new stamp. Actually, I think they're issuing a whole bunch of stamps for Canada's 150. And on this stamp is actually a picture. It's in the shape of the maple leaf.
Mm-hmm.
And the left leaf and the middle leaf is a picture of a rainbow flag. And the right leaf has the Canada 150 Canada Post logo. I don't know. They've got like their own unique special logo here.
That's a weird combination.
I know, it's strange. But anyway, they've released it to commemorate the Civil Marriages Act, which legalized gay marriage in 2005.
Hooray!
Pretty exciting stuff. Go Canada.
It's 12 years. If gay marriage in Canada were a child, it would be in grade 7 right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you can bet your bottom dollar that there are some gay marriage children in grade 7 right now. Yeah. So, just last week on May 17th, was the International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia. This was kind of important in Canada because that was the day that these freedom of speech advocates were speaking against the bill, C-16. But it's also the day that Special Advisor on LGBT Issues, MP Randy Boissonneau, made a statement. He still is yet to return the emails to Karen Queer asking for an interview, but that's on the side. But he released a statement saying that Canada plans to apologize to Canadians who faced injustice because of their sexuality.
Aww.
It's they're planning to do a big thing. It's committed to apologize in an inclusive and meaningful manner before the end of 2017. So at some point.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's just hope that their apology isn't the same as the Toronto Police apology.
Where they turn around and start oppressing people a week later.
Well, that is so bad. So for folks listening, the Toronto Police apologized for the Operation Soap raids, which targeted gay folks in bathhouses.
Yeah, it was 81 or 82? It was 81, I think.
I forget which. Yeah. And then I think within a week, they spent $1 million on a raid targeting gay people in Etobicoke Park.
Yeah.
So if we wait another 20 years, we'll have an apology for that as well. So,
mm-hmm.
But let's hope that Canada actually does an apology that's worth some weight. There is a feeling that in Germany in March, they passed a bill that would annul thousands of convictions who were criminalized under homosexuality. And in Britain, they also annulled thousands of convictions who they were all pardoned, most of them posthumously. So there is a feeling that maybe Canada would also go and pardon.
It could turn into an expensive apology, though, because...
Well, that's what they're saying.
All those
there might be money involved. You know?
All the people who were unjustly fired from the government...
Mm-hmm.
In the 80s and 90s.
Some of them are still alive.
Many of them are still alive. And if they were unjustly fired, then there's a pension that they should be getting.
Absolutely.
Now, because they were fired and they haven't been working for the past 30 years, the pension would be limited to whatever 5 or 10 year period or whatever that they had already been working at the government. But still, it would be money owed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be fun.
And I don't know how they're going to pay for all of that unfair dismissal. It's going to be, it'll be interesting to see kind of how that rolls out. But they're very tight-lipped on that at the moment. But it's, we just got so much good Canada news. Now, the other bit of Canada news that I found was in Lethbridge.
Lethbridge, Ontario.
Alberta, isn't it?
Oh.
Yeah,
Alberta. Okay. Well, there's also a Lethbridge, Ontario.
No, I'm pretty sure this one's in Alberta.
No, I accept that, but I'm saying.
What?
Anyway, go on.
No, there was one in Alberta. Anyway, so the Lethbridge Pride Fest Society have decided that they're going to paint a rainbow flag on the sidewalk. Now you're probably thinking...
A lot of places are doing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But they would be the first people to also paint a trans flag on the sidewalk.
That's pink, pale blue, and white, I think.
I think it's pink, pale blue, and pink.
That's pink, pale blue, white, blue, pale pink. So I thought it was like... It's symmetrical. I know that. It's vertically symmetrical. You're going to look it up, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's blue, pale blue, pink, white, pink, pale blue.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Gosh, that, we have to, like, Google that. How embarrassing.
See, I knew. It's not three stripes. They're not a European nation. You know, all of the flags are vertically symmetrical and have usually at least three colors and more than three stripes. So at least one of them repeats, generally speaking. Like the bear flag... I think it's got 7 stripes in it, but only 3 colors. Anyway, so, tell me your story. Tell me.
Yeah, so it's interesting because council almost unanimously approved it, except for one guy. So San Francisco, Washington, and Philadelphia are talking about it. Lethbridge beat them to the race and were the first officially to create a temporary sidewalk, which is...
I would vote against it if somebody proposed maybe we do rainbow on one intersection and the trans flag on a different intersection. Now you have more intersections with more rainbow flags on it. And I'd be like, no, that's cool. Let's spread it out a little bit. If your local queer village is larger than one intersection and you can spread it out a bit, then yeah, by all means, go for it. But yeah, I don't know.
No, I was looking into it because previously the council had voted it down, believing that the rainbow flag actually already represented everybody. And in some...
It does more than it doesn't.
Yeah, for sure. It is the kind of inclusive flag.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are certainly very good arguments in the trans community. You know, that is... that is a flag that represents them and their experiences, you know, and their experiences differ very, very much from a gay man.
Yeah. Or, also, if you do both of the flags, by separately also doing the trans flag, you're acknowledging the fact that there's been a huge step forward for them this year in the form of Bill C-16. So, I mean, it is acknowledging the fact that this is a big year for
trans rights.
Yeah, for trans rights and trans people.
Now, we also found out a couple of weeks ago at the Senate committee hearing where we presented 2 weeks ago in our show, that the Canadian government is in talks with the Passport Canada to see about getting a gender neutral moniker on passports and to see how they can roll that out.
Well, there's been a lot of people who are saying that gender on licenses may not actually be necessary if it's a photo license, because if you're male or female, if you don't look like the photo, then it doesn't matter. It's not really an issue, because most of them also have your height and your weight. So if you have your height, weight, your picture, hair color, eye color, then what is...
I mean, are they going to lift your skirt and double check that
It's just unnecessary to have that extra bit of information.
So the Canadian government, as we mentioned, is certainly looking to help. And the High Commission, which is the Canadian embassy, but in Britain, the Canadian High Commission in London have actually gone and installed a gender neutral washroom for trans folks who go to the High Commission for whatever purpose that they may need. Actually, I've been...
Mostly paperwork.
I've been to the High Commission.
To do paperwork?
To do paperwork. My travel documents didn't arrive in time and I was traveling and I had to get to pick some up. So we had to do a day trip to London, which was very exciting. And the reason why we had to do a day trip to London is because of all of one day, for a grand total of maybe 3 hours, was the High Commission actually open and available to take business. So if we were not there outside the door at like opening time on a Wednesday morning to get in line far enough that they didn't close the door on you, by the time it was like 11 o'clock, you wouldn't get your business done. And then they processed my paperwork and handed it to me. And the guy at passport control didn't even look at it. So, I mean, whatever. Point being, very nice that they have this gender neutral washroom for folks who can get there between the hours of 9 and 11 on a Wednesday morning.
Have you ever seen Terry Gilliam's Brazil?
No.
Oh, you should see it, because it is sort of the ultimate critique of, like, it's the only dystopian sort of futuristic movie ever made where the thing that creates the dystopia is not nuclear war, disease, or something. It is bureaucracy becoming so inflated that life can't function anymore. And it's super British. Super British, yeah. And everything about it is just hilarious. And a lot of people have actually said that the fact that Brazil exists is kind of what reigned in the Thatcher era, because people kept going, oh, but Brazil, because it was starting to head in that direction. And England is still very much known for having a very, very
robust
civil service. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Are we going to break for music and tea?
We are breaking for music and tea. This is Coto Barrette and Undone, and we'll be back just after
Which band is it?
Coto Barrette. And we'll be back just after this, talking about some scientific studies.
Those are between air quotes, by the way.
Yeah, I'm saying it that way because I'm doing like finger air quotes, scientific studies.
They can't see that on the radio.
Which is why I'm describing it and changing my voice. Scientific studies.
Yeah, no, you're still...
Yeah, you're not sold.
You're still a turkey.
We'll be back just after this.
I won't face it alone.
welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media, and what a lot of news that happened in Canada.
Right.
Everything from trans rights to new postage stamps to sidewalks. Quite the busy day of Canadian news.
I mean, the sidewalk thing is interesting.
Yeah.
I'll give it that. That is interesting, but not super exciting. More like, so, you know, 2 p.m. BBC, like, oh.
And in other news, a sidewalk has been painted with a trans flag. So I'm going to tell you the outline of a study. We have a couple of them, and then we're going to talk a bit about it.
Okay.
So the University of Nicosia in Cyprus surveyed a total of 1,509 heterosexual participants in a study.
Right.
And one of the things that they found most was when they were looking at the origins.
Like,
my God, this tea is not strong enough.
Just say Genesis. The genesis of homosexuality.
They're trying to find out where lesbians come from. Where lesbianism. We all know lesbians come from Lesbos, but where does lesbianism come from?
Folk music.
Too much folk music equals lesbian. The reason why there are lesbians, I can't say the word origin.
So the evolutionary source.
According to 1,500 heterosexuals, presumably men, and they found that their conclusion is there are lesbians because straight men find it hot.
Okay.
End of reasoning.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, when you said there are lesbians because of men, I thought you meant there's lesbians because gay men, that like homosexuality appeared in men first and then spread to women. And I was like, I could maybe think of reasons why that is, because the X chromosome, Y chromosome, but no, you did not say that it was because of this. This is, as you say, preposterous.
I didn't say preposterous because I probably wouldn't get it out properly. But the lead researcher, Menelaos Apostolo,
show me this
said,
name. What do you do? Oh, okay,
my argument in
that's paper, Menelaus.
Whatever.
Menelaus, it's a classic Greek name.
That guy said, my argument in this paper is this. A considerable proportion of men desire same-sex attractions in women. And this is one possible reason why many women have such attractions. Now, he's not necessarily saying that this is the reason why, but maybe one of the reasons why. I still think it's bold.
I think this is one of those things where he may have confused his argument. So there is a huge thing in the queer community where you have a lot of bisexual and lesbian women complaining about the performance of same-sex attraction in order to attract men. And if you've ever been to a club that is like 19 to 25-year-olds, the women often do perform same-sex attraction in order to attract a man. But there is such a thing as the performance of lesbianism. And it is a real thing, but it's a cultural thing. And the reason why they're doing it, because I've lived in more than a couple places in my life, and, you know, at least two of them were not in North America, and I never saw that overseas, and I've spoken to a lot of people who said they've never seen it overseas. It's very much a Western thing. And so the performance of lesbianism by straight women in order to attract straight men, I do believe that exists, but I also think it's culturally constrained, and I also think that after a certain age, people kind of lose interest.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is... I think he's just mixing up his phenomena, where it's like the cultural aspects versus the sort of biopsych aspects. I think this is pseudoscience.
Yeah, there's even more things to consider here.
That should be cultural anthropology, because if this was done under the umbrella of cultural anthropology and not like biopsych, then he would have just discovered, or he would have confirmed, you know, a hypothesis that people have had about North America for quite some time. And even Britain, actually. I think I remember a few people saying that in Britain the performance of lesbianism for the male gaze is actually not uncommon, but it's not a universal thing.
Yeah, and it's something that's certainly promoted within pornography.
Oh, yes.
So his stats are 34.3% of male respondents would prefer a partner who is predominantly attracted to members of the opposite sex, but occasionally members of the same sex.
Okay.
So, you know, these 34% of guys would like women who are mostly straight, but okay to fool around with other women. Whereas for women, it was only 7.8% of women. And I think maybe those 7.8% have not read gay erotica.
7.8% of women who are interested in a boyfriend who would be willing to fool around with another guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But yet again, I feel like they may not have heard of gay erotica.
But that's, again, the cultural phenomenon where it's not really encouraged as much in the Western context.
So do you give that scientific study a pass or a fail?
It depends on what field of science they believe they are falling under. Because if they think they're doing evolutionary biology or they think they're doing evolutionary psychology, then I give it 100% a fail. Mm-hmm. If it's cultural anthropology or possibly even sociology, then I give it a pass with amendments. The amendment, yes, being stop saying you're doing science and start acknowledging that you're looking at culture.
So we're looking now to the University of Toronto, Mississauga. Now, what they found...
I like how you said Mississauga. Mississauga.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Mississauga. Found that men who prefer to be bottoms often have older brothers, are left-handed, and did not conform to gender stereotypes. Essentially, a left-handed, effeminate gay men...
Okay.
...are bottoms.
Okay.
This is the groundbreaking study from the University of Stating the Obvious. And it said that self-identified tops rated themselves as more masculine compared to bottoms, and tops were more likely to score higher on male typical cognitive styles.
Oh, okay, then that is very different then. Self-reporting is a quagmire of issues. If you're looking at... I mean... The only thing you can truly conclude from any study that includes self-reporting is self-perception.
Yeah.
That's the only thing you can actually... You're not actually test... That's not what testing is. But if they're doing the cognitive tests... So cognitive tests, when they're looking at gender differences, things like mental rotations. So, I mean, you've probably did this during standardized testing in high school when they're looking at, like, IQ levels and things like that. And they have, like, an image, and they say, what's the next in the sequence? And they give you seven things... And the correct answer is, you know, C, which is identical to the second thing in the sequence but turned to be upside down or a mirror image or flipped or something like that. Men tend to perform slightly better on tasks like that, on mental rotation tasks. And that's actually, mental rotation tasks and sense of direction are actually not unrelated. Yeah. It's just mental visualization of spaces. And then women tend to do better on certain kinds of language tasks. So, you know, A is to B, like C is to blank. Women tend to be better on the syllogisms. And so anyway, you have these tests like that. And if bottoms tend to pattern, what's probably actually happening is it's not that bottoms are patterning like women. It's that bottoms are patterning more down the middle or less typically masculine.
Well, what they're saying here is bottoms scored higher on feminine personality traits,
right,
compared to tops.
But was it relative to women? Because, like,
it was relative to the tops.
To the tops, I know. But what they're saying here, like, this could be like they got 5% higher on average, mm-hmm, which is...
It's not saying that they were more effeminate than women, but rather they were more effeminate than masculine tops.
Now, something to bear in mind here is that in the few times when people have looked into the possible sort of genetic or developmental underpinnings of homosexuality, in men and women, just in general, something that's come up dozens and dozens of times is there might be different mechanisms. And the mechanism that creates... Like, you could have, like, let's say there's, like, five different mechanisms that result in homosexuality in adult humans. And you could say that, you know, this one mechanism here tends to produce bottoms. that would not alarm me. Like, I don't necessarily subscribe to that, and I don't really endorse any theory like that. But just from what I understand about developmental psychology, it wouldn't alarm me if that turned out to be the case. But it's, you know, the onus is on the experimenter to actually prove it using good science and not weird self-reporting studies. This is a good pilot study for something serious. That's that is what I feel.
For me, it seemed to state the obvious that bottoms are slightly more effeminate and tops are slightly more masculine.
But is it though? Because if you speak to somebody like Mike Tattersall, we've had on their show many times.
He is very masculine.
I know, but if you ask him about tops and bottoms in the kink world, the bottoms tend to be the ultra butch ones, the 6 foot five.
More niche, I believe. Yeah. I feel like they're a interesting subsect.
Yes.
But we're going to look at one last study.
Okay.
Which I think dovetails very nicely from our conversation. And this is from the University of Queensland in Australia.
Ooh.
And they analyzed the sexual attractiveness of men with varying lengths of facial hair.
Yes.
For both men and women. But what they also included was a look at gay men.
So right.
They had such a large sample size that they were able to pull out results specifically for gay men.
Right.
Which is pretty cool. They included homosexual individuals to provide an opportunity to investigate whether or not there was a pattern there.
Right.
So overall, facial hair had a stronger sexual response versus clean shaven.
Right.
People prefer slightly hairier. Women like a bit of stubble.
Yeah.
So you've got a bit of stubble right now. If you were a ladies' man, you've got just the right length. and then a full beard is generally less sexy for like hookups. But apparently, if it's good for long term, because it means that you can provide a stable family and hearth and fight for resources.
Because you've neglected to.
You have a very large beard. I'm just picturing like a lumberjack.
It's
with
just
a bushy beard.
This is another. Is this being done by like a biology or psychology department, or is this being done by a sociology or anthropology department?
Let me have a look.
Because they did the exact same studies in the 80s and they actually found that clean shaven was found to be more sexy. And what this is neglecting is the concept that culture can shape sexual attraction to a greater degree. If this was done by...
It was published in the Journal of Evolution and Human Behavior.
Oh my God.
And it's shown the University of Queensland in Australia based on a poll of 1,500 men and women in the Czech Republic.
Okay.
And Brazil.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't know how they got that sample.
I mean, this is culturally bound because if you're looking at a beard versus clean shaven, you're not actually looking at the genetic underpinnings of facial hair. You're looking at whether or not somebody bothered to scrape a piece of sharpened metal across their face in the past 2 months or not. That is a behavior. That's a learned behavior. It's a cultural artifact. This has more to, and even then, let's say you do have a beard, how do you shape it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I generally speaking am not attracted to beards, except there is one guy that I know that every time he...
Thanks, Bastion.
No, it's not you. there is one guy, and it's you've... I'll tell you after. Okay. Actually, I'll tell you now, and if you feel it's inappropriate, you can fix it in post. It's James. James, who sometimes comes to the house parties.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If he's clean-shaven or has a beard, either way, I find it difficult to not tell him to his face that I'm attracted to him. Mm. And I'm usually shy with this kind of thing, so he's very much my type. But it's just he shapes his beard perfectly to his face. Mm-hmm. And so this idea that you have hair on your face and therefore you're sexy, it's a little bit to it than that. So like if you take care of it, if you shape it, if you clean up the edges, and even then that goes with time. So like the kind of like wild hipster beard that's in now in the 1800s would have been considered just vile. You would have looked like a vagabond. In the on the other hand, you have the over-groomed beard where like the edge of the beard looks like it was laser cut because it's perfect.
Yeah,
that can also be unappealing if you have a cultural expectation for it to look casual. And so this is there's a way more cultural artifacts in here than I think they're acknowledging. And this is one of the things that psych departments are known for being bad at, is training upcoming psychologists on the interaction between psychology and culture. And trust me, the cognitive scientists, cultural anthropologists, even linguists every so often who are sitting in the room are like, repeat it again in 10 years, 20 years, and 30 years, and then we'll talk.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
So, some of the findings in this study was that homosexual men preferred hairier stimuli.
Hairier stimuli?
Actual words. Than their heterosexual women.
Oh my God.
Supporting past findings that homosexual men prefer stronger preferences for masculine traits. So,
when I first came
in, I think Jake would agree, my partner, regarding the support for hairier stimuli.
When I first came out, I remember if a man had hair beneath his eyebrows, he was a vile, disgusting piece of garbage who needed to wax himself into oblivion before anybody would even speak to him. Yep. And this is...
He didn't have perfectly manicured eyebrows, that was it.
No.
I mean, like, mustache and beard?
Yeah, hair beneath the eyebrows. I mean, basically, like, no facial hair, and then everything from the neck down. People would even completely and totally shave their pubes. And we're talking about, like...
So, just to finish up here, the male participants indicated an attraction to mates with a self-similar degree of beardness.
Oh my God.
However, reported the quantity of desired facial hair was thicker than the actual partners. So essentially what they're saying is that men wanted, beards, and they usually wanted X amount of beard, and nearly always their partners had less than X amount of beard. So their conclusion is, well, you don't get your perfect date.
I mean, that also contributes to the cloning issue, you know.
Oh, yes. There are so many Instagram accounts with, like, gay men that look identical.
Yeah.
I can't even...
Sometimes, like, to the point where they look like twins.
Gay twins. That's the thing.
Gay twin boyfriend, I think it is. Gay... Yeah. Let's look up that link.
So, we'll give some good news once you look that link. The Australian Medical Association is backing equal marriage, according to Pink News. As it, discrimination is bad for health, according to the...
For health reasons.
Yeah. Gay men should get married to support national health, which I thought was a really interesting discussion. In Romania, 1,000 people marched in a pride parade. This is at the same time as the Romanian government is considering changes to the constitution, which would define a marriage as between man and woman, as currently it is a spouse. So they're currently fighting that in as much as they can. Leo Varadkar may become Ireland's first openly gay prime minister.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
he is the lead contender to take over the leadership of the party. The previous prime minister, Enda Kenny, actually resigned, or stepped down, rather, earlier this year after being 15 years as the leader. And so as a result, this guy is in the lead, but he's also substantially in the lead. So it is very likely that he will be the next prime minister, making him only the fourth openly gay prime minister in the world.
In history.
Yeah, which is pretty exciting. Did you find what you were looking for?
Yeah, it was just called Boyfriend Twin.
Oh, Boyfriend Twin.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's not very exciting. But you can find that on...
Tumblr.
Tumblr, yeah. Just Tumblr search Boyfriend Twin.
Yeah.
Do you remember the movie Pride?
Yes, I do.
With about the Welsh miners, you know.
Yeah.
Support the gays. Anyway, those guys. So, the lesbians and gays support the miners.
Yes.
LGSM. And Mark Ashton was the lead of the guy who invented this, and he was the main character in this movie that was named, kind of made after him.
Right.
Well, yeah. In London, there may be a plaque erected to commemorate. Ashton died in 1987 of AIDS-related complications. Bookshop in Marchmont Street in Bloomsbury would be the site for the plaque, and of course I think that bookshop also played a role in the movie.
Did they use the original bookshop?
I'm not sure if it was the original bookshop, but it may well have been. So for folks listening, Ashton, who was a gay man, rallied together the gays and lesbians in London, or many of them who would listen, to set up LGS and SM, gays and lesbians in support of the miners. And it was essentially, they were...
The added piece of context here was it was Thatcher era, and she had shut down all of the coal mines. No, and there was a strike because she wanted unreasonable working conditions. And so all of the miners in Wales, almost all of the miners in Wales, went on strike. Because they don't just mine coal. It was the coal miners. It was the tin miners. I think they were fine. But the coal miners, for sure, completely on strike.
So she was fighting with the coal board, and I think she essentially... I can't remember what she did. I mean, look at Thatcher coal mines. It's a big thing.
She tried to force them back to work.
Yeah.
That was one of the big things. And the reason why they needed to raise funds was in order to feed the miners.
Yeah. Because their entire families and the communities.
What little money they had went towards paying the rent and utilities. And so they didn't have much left over from food.
So it's, check out Pride. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful piece.
But also read the story. I mean, a lot of this I know because I also looked it up after I saw the movie, so...
And I mean, I'm familiar-ish with, the mining strike in Wales and the impact that that had culturally.
Oh, yes.
I mean, of course, the closure of the mines in Wales decimated major, economies left, right, and centre. There are towns in Wales that still have not recovered. Yep. Merthyr Tydfil has, I think, one of the highest rates of drug addiction in the country, like the whole of the UK, because it still hasn't quite recovered from the complete economic decimation of its main industry being just cut and run. Margaret Thatcher, not very good decision there from her. But yeah,
surprise!
There could be a plaque, which is very exciting.
Would it be a plaque or a plinth?
No, it'll be a plaque.
Not a plinth?
A plaque. There's an education law bill, Senate Bill 2078, at the Texas House, Texas Senate House. Anyway, I bring this up because this is a good final, funny last story. So this bill has just had an anti-trans battery measure just flung in.
Which bill?
This bill around education in the Texas House, so Texas Senate.
Okay.
So what women, female Democratic lawmakers in Texas decided to do is occupy all of the male restrooms in the Senate House.
Okay.
They're there and they're not moving. So the Republicans are controlling the House, but the Democrats, in particular the Democratic women representatives, are hoping to block them, to persuade them otherwise by literally making their washrooms inaccessible.
Yeah.
By constantly using them so that nobody else can.
And it's something that I always like to remind people about Texas, is that on average, Texas is one of the most conservative states in America, but Dallas and Austin are two of the most liberal cities in America. And if you look at some of the policies that are coming out of Austin and Dallas, they're putting New York to shame in some degrees because they're really progressive. It's just that Texas is really large.
Yeah.
And Texas is mostly rural. It's actually one of the few states where more people live outside of the major cities than in the major cities, because any scrap of land you can live on, someone's there. Sometimes you have people with 20 acres or something like that, but all of the land is taken. And so it's really strange when you look at how politics plays out in Dallas when you have not Dallas, in Texas, because Austin and Dallas are so progressive and the countryside is so conservative. But it's one of the few places where there's almost the same number of people. So it's really fascinating. Anyway,
So last thing, in the UK, 120 schools have introduced gender neutral uniforms. So boys can wear skirts, girls can wear trousers, totally up to them.
Cool.
I remember being, when I was in high school in Britain, a four score and a year ago, that was a topic of debate, why do girls always have to wear skirts and so on and so forth. So it's glad that that's happening. And the British government is looking to rule and overhaul the blood donation rules, bringing the 12-month waiting limit down to 3 months, saying that it better reflects current testing technologies.
Really, it should not be since the last time you've had sex. It should be since the last time you've had sex with someone new.
Mm-hmm.
That is how it should be, because if you're having sex with the same person for the past 12 years, and you had sex yesterday, and you haven't strayed, then I don't know. I mean, they should test your blood one way or the other.
Yeah.
But I mean, if they're just going to go on information and do a checklist to whether or not they should put your blood in a high-risk category or not, if you haven't had sex with somebody new in 10 years, then I don't see...
Well, that's all for today, folks. We are playing out with Ria May's Thoughts on Fire featuring Classified. And that's all for now. I've been Nick Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
Thank you for listening. We'll
would tear me apart to think that you were lying. All these thoughts on fire. I didn't listen to your negative reasons. I don't got time for that sort of thinking. I'm unaware if you're trying to bring me down. Too busy thinking better thoughts. And I love that so much. I believe I can do it if I want. I believe I can do it if I want. I believe that everyone's with me. All these thoughts on fire, fire. All these thoughts on fire, fire. If they tell you you can't, they're a liar, liar. All these thoughts on fire. You to the finish line. I was your favorite underdog. I'm gonna miss that so much. I believe.